All right, so today we're going to continue in our study of Shabbat, the Sabbath day. This is part three, and I'm hoping to conclude it today. So this is hopefully going to be the last of the parts, and we're going to try to wrap everything up together. Now, let's remember again as we're going through this that we need to approach this critically important teaching with open minds, hearts, and spirits so that we can truly receive what Yahweh desires for us and from us in terms of guarding, keeping, and remembering Shabbat. Okay, so we were up to and in the process of looking at the idea of how should Shabbat be remembered and guarded? What issues come up in how we are observing and guarding and remembering Shabbat? And so we're going to look now at the idea about dealing with buying and selling issues and bearing no burden and that kind of stuff. We're going to go to Nehemiah chapter 13 and in verse 15. Because I believe that as we look at this, I want to just remind us again, the idea of understanding all Shabbat issues can be most readily understood when we are looking at things from the context of holy or set apart time. Okay, we're trying to make sure that what we're doing doesn't trespass or trample on the idea that this is holy and set apart time. So in Nehemiah chapter 13, we're going to begin in verse 15. In those days, I saw in Yehuda, in Judah, in the kingdom of Judah, the treading wine presses. They were treading those who were treading wine presses on the Sabbath, and bringing in sheaves and loading donkeys with wine, grapes, and figs, and all kinds of burdens which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. So I warned them on the day they sold food. And men of Tsur dwelt there, bringing in fish and all kinds of goods, and sold them on the Sabbath to the children of Yehuda. And in Jerusalem, then I contended with the nobles of Yehuda and said to them, what evil matter is this that you are doing, profaning the Sabbath day? Did not your fathers do the same so that our Elohim brought all this evil on us and on this city? Yet you bring added wrath on Israel by profaning the Sabbath. And it came to be at the gates of Jerusalem, as it began to be dark before the Sabbath, that I commanded the gates to be shut and commanded that they should not be opened till after the Sabbath. And I stationed some of my servants at the gates so that no burdens would be brought in on the Sabbath day. And the merchants and sellers of all kinds of wares spent the night outside Jerusalem once or twice, and I warned them, and I said to them, why do you spend the night around the wall? If you do so again, I'm going to lay hands on you. From that time on, they came no more on Shabbat. Apparently, Nehemiah was a fairly scary guy. Because that threat, they didn't come back. Verse 22, and I commanded the Levites that they should cleanse themselves and they should come guarding the gates to set apart the Sabbath day. Remember me, O my Elohim, concerning this also, and pardon me according to the greatness of your kindness. All right, so let's see what's going on here. So apparently there was a problem going on in Judah, where there was buying and selling and business of all sorts of things going on the Sabbath day. There was those who were actually doing the work of creating, or remember we talked about work or toil and the idea of it being to produce fruit, that which would be lucrative and that you could turn around and sell, that kind of a thing. Well, look what you see happening. They were treading wine presses on the Sabbath. So they were going to make wine out of the grapes. And they were treading those so that they could have the product be produced on the Sabbath. They were bringing in sheaves. They were loading donkeys. They were doing all kinds of burdens. And again, here, the idea of burdens is not like if you had to, say, move a table because there was a lot more people at your house than you thought and you needed to set up a table for them. We're talking about burdens of business here, that they were doing labor, business, work related to those kind of things. And so we see that Nehemiah said, this is the reason that we were already under punishment from Elohim, because this is evil. Now, we've talked about this in other teachings, the understanding that evil is not what we've always defined it as necessarily. Evil is, very simply, that which goes against how Yahweh intended it to be. Anything that goes against his teachings and instructions or Torah, that is evil. All right. It's not simply limited to things that are grotesquely, obviously evil, like rapists and child molesters and murderers and, you know, all those kind of things. Those are obvious evil. But breaking any commandment is considered evil. Anything that we do to go against his will and his instruction, he considers evil. So that's the way Nehemiah refers to it here. He says, look, you guys are bringing about, he says, so did your fathers do the same so that our Elohim brought all this evil on us? Because you did what was evil. You profaned the Sabbath day. So now he brought these things on us. So there's ramifications. We talked about it when we started in Exodus 31 that if you were to break or profane the Sabbath, that you were to be either cut off or killed, depending on what level of breaking of it that you did. And so strong ramifications. He's saying, look, you guys are not getting it. He's punished us. We're in punishment now for doing these kind of things, and now you're going to continue to do them? By the way, this is the same, I don't want to mock, but it's the same, just, I'll call it ridiculous. The ridiculous logic, or the nonsensical logic that mainstream Christianity would have to the idea that, you know, we're in the need of the Messiah to die because we've sinned, because we've broken the law, but therefore, so the problem will resolve it by just taking away the law. It just doesn't make any sense. It's completely irrational and illogical. The same thing here. They're in punishment for breaking things like the Sabbath, and Nehemiah is going, are you not understanding? The reason we're in the punishment is because we're doing these things. So continuing to do them cannot be the answer. And that's why it's illogical for us to think that the law was done away with because somehow breaking the law caused the need for the Messiah to die, because sin is a transgression of the law, and he died because we sin, so therefore we're going to take away the thing that defines what sin is. That just doesn't make any sense. Okay, so continuing here, as we're looking through this, we see that in the verses, by the way, I didn't write this in my notes, but I just noticed it. You notice that it says here, as it began to be dark. So for all those sunrise to sunrise Sabbath keepers, what are you going to do with Nehemiah chapter 13 and verse 19? Because he says, as it began to be dark before the Sabbath, I came and I commanded the gates to be shut down. He didn't say he woke up early in the morning while it was still dark before it got light again. He said, right before the Sabbath, before it became dark, he warned them, you're not doing this on the Sabbath day. So there's a strong case and verse for helping to understand the sundown to sundown, not sunrise to sunrise. Okay, now, also what we see in here is the Levites getting involved. So we see, and he commands the Levites that they should be cleansing of, they should cleanse themselves and that they should come and guard the gates to set apart the Sabbath. So what I see happening here as part of his instruction, you know, he's telling them, don't buy or sell, don't create the goods that you would buy or sell, don't be manufacturing and producing. He says, and lock everything down. But then he gets the Levites involved and he says, look, your job is first and foremost, and I'm going to kind of reword this a little bit, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, and you can certainly have issue if you want. I think that the Levites, priests, in other words, are the spiritual leadership representing Yahweh at the time. He's referring to those that are in spiritual leadership at the time who represent him. And he said, look, they are to cleanse themselves. In other words, not just physically washing themselves, but I think spiritually as well, especially in relationship to this issue. In other words, they had to make sure that they were not in violation. They were to make sure that they had washed themselves, that they had cleansed themselves of this issue. Because I like that the word there is actually translated as cleanse. They were to cleanse themselves. So it could be that they were just as guilty as everybody else. Okay, so they commanded the Levites that they should cleanse themselves and they should come and then they should guard the gates. Okay, so one of the roles of leadership, those who are in spiritual leadership, those who represent Yahweh to the community are to be the guardians of the gates. The guardians of the gates. So keep that in mind as we go forward. We're going to read some more things. But that means that they have that job, not everybody. You're to guard the Sabbath. They're to guard the gates to make sure that people aren't breaking the Sabbath and aren't breaking the law. So they are the specifically listed here as those who were in charge at the time. This was the Levites. He said they were commanded to guard the gates so that they could make sure it was set apart. Very interesting. So now let's continue in Jeremiah 17, continuing on this idea of bearing no burden. Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah 17. Okay, we're going to begin in verse 19. In Jeremiah 17:19, thus said Yahweh, Thus Yahweh said to me, go and stand in the gate of the children of the people by which the sovereigns of Yehuda come in and by which they go out, and all the gates of Jerusalem. So who is being told to do this now? Yirmiyahu is being told as what? As the spiritual representative of Yahweh. The leadership, the spiritual leadership of Yahweh, to go speak to the physical leadership of Judah. He says, go stand in the gate of the children of the people by which the kings of Judah come in, by which they go out, and all the gates of Yerushalayim. And you shall say to them, hear the word of Yahweh, you sovereigns, you kings of Judah, and all Judah and all the inhabitants of Jerusalem who enter by these gates. Thus says Yahweh, guard yourselves and bear no burden on the Sabbath day, nor bring it in by the gates of Jerusalem, nor take a burden out of your houses on the Sabbath day, nor do any work, and you shall set apart the Sabbath day as I commanded your fathers. Okay, so let's remember here that we have this idea of this burden. Now, some people will use this to just think about lifting heavy objects. But if you connect this up with Nehemiah, what we just read in Nehemiah, if we understand that the Hebrew seems, if you actually look at the Hebrew, and I don't have the word in front of me, but if you look at the Hebrew, it seems to indicate historically that this is referring to burdens or bundles of items of the sort carried by people and camels. In other words, that was the context of what the actual word meant. Now, we've said this often. We probably haven't said it during this teaching, but if you speak more than one language, you understand exactly what I'm talking about. That there are so many more levels of flavor and nuances to the words in your language than maybe in the other language and vice versa. There are things that you can say, and someone says, well, what does that mean? And you tell them in a simplistic way what it means, but it doesn't really give the fullness of what that word means, the full flavor and spectrum. And you guys know what I'm talking about if you speak more than one language, where the one-to-one doesn't really work. You don't just have a one-to-one trade-off of one word and then find the other word in the other language that means exactly the same. Because when I say something like burden in English and you say it in another language, it may have a lot more to it, the type of burden, the size of the burden. There's a flavor to it. There's more context to it. So when you look historically in the scriptures even, how the word is used, it seems to be linked a lot more to the idea of that which was carried by people and camels, etc., the kind of items that people sold, like you see in the book of Nehemiah, the book of Nehemiah, where Nehemiah links it to the business items, okay? So the figs, the grapes, the wine, and all these other things. So let's understand the types of burdens here. And of course, he then says, not to take the burdens out of your house or bring them in on the Sabbath day, nor do any work. He's connecting it all together. He's connecting all these items all together. So this is the same word, by the way, here, as we see in Nehemiah chapter 13, verse 15 and verse 19. So it's the same word exactly in both places. Continuing in verse 23 says, but they did not obey or incline their ear, and they made their neck stiff to not hear or not to receive instruction. And it shall be, if you diligently obey me, declares Yahweh, to bring in no burden through the gates of this city on the Sabbath day and set apart the Sabbath day to do no work in it, then the sovereigns, the kings, and heads sitting on the throne of David shall enter in through the gates of this city, riding in chariots and on horses. They and their heads, the men of Yehuda, and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and this city shall be inhabited forever. And they shall come from the cities of Yehuda, and from the places around Jerusalem, and from the land of Binyamin, and from the low country, and from the mountains, and from the south, bringing burnt offerings and slaughterings, grain offerings and incense, bringing offerings of praise to the house of Yahweh. But if you do not obey me, here's the warning again, if you don't obey me to set apart the Sabbath day, and not to bear a burden when entering the gates of Jerusalem on the Sabbath day, then I shall kindle a fire in its gates, and it shall consume the palaces of Jerusalem and not be quenched. And not be quenched. Okay, so that's a pretty strong warning. I think we should absolutely focus on the Sabbath in a serious way. That's what I think. This is a serious issue, according to Yahweh. And it's not just in one place in one verse. It's everywhere. We were reading it in Exodus. We were reading it in Deuteronomy. We were reading it in Nehemiah and Jeremiah. We're going to read it in Isaiah. We can read it everywhere. It's a serious issue. By the way, people will say then, well, if it's such a serious issue, why doesn't Messiah bring it up? Because it was the one issue that didn't need bringing up. I mean, he didn't need to tell them to keep the Sabbath. That had to already be assumed. This is like top of the list, number one rule. Don't break the Sabbath. Keep the Sabbath. Remember it, guard it, etc. Hey, it's in the top 10. I mean, it's critical. It's critical. As a matter of fact, it's the very first commandment that's actually that deals with us directly and not just dealing with him, right? Because it says the other ones are about loving him and not having idols and et cetera, not putting the name to shame. And then, boom, the Sabbath day, the day that transitions the two together. Keep the Sabbath day. Honor it. Focus on it. Because that's the thing that connects us with him. And that's the same thing with the Ten Commandments. The first couple of commandments are focused just on him. Fourth one focuses on us and him. And then the fifth one starts showing us how we can then apply things. Also, the fifth one deals with parenting and authority. And then after that, it's about us dealing with each other from 6 through 10, the last five. So just see how that's positioned, how we have that in there. So hopefully we should understand now that we are to not do any business, not do any burdens, creating any burdens or carrying any burdens of business, not do anything to manufacture, make, or produce things that are for business. So one of the questions that came up, I think, last week, someone asked about making tzitzit on Shabbat, and some people make their tzitzit and sell their tzitzit. If it's tzitzit you sell, for sure, you're not making them on Shabbat. If it's tzitzit that you're just making for yourself, well, unless something happened in an emergency, why would you need to do it on Shabbat? Why wouldn't you just do it another day? In other words, if I was putting my tzitzit on and realized as I'm putting them on that they fell apart or they'd broken or torn or something had damaged them and I needed to have something that was correct, or maybe I can't find one of the four and as I'm putting them on, well, then I would have to go fix that. That would be an important thing to do. But on the other hand, be careful that we're not doing things and justifying that which we are eventually going to sell. Because now it becomes something that's a burden that breaks Shabbat, even though it doesn't weigh anything. Very light. So don't think of burden necessarily as just being that which is heavy. Because I know sometimes people get all upset. Well, I noticed that, you know, on Shabbat, we move all these chairs and these tables around so that we could sit and eat. That sounds like a burden to me. Do you know that almost always it's a person that says that is a person that I never saw lift a table? Isn't that funny? I've had this happen in almost every congregation we've worked with at some point, and it's almost always a person that I've never seen move a chair or move a table. So I always look at them like, and why does this bother you? I never see you do anything. I mean, obviously you've already made a decision not to do it, but that's not the point. Physical effort is not the issue. The Levites that were in the temple, the Kohanim, were doing sacrifices and doing all kinds of physical effort on Shabbat. It's that it's physical effort commanded by Yahweh that's important, or that to facilitate that which is commanded by Yahweh that's important. And so it's not just that it was physically exerting to move a chair or a table, but you need to plan ahead for what you can plan ahead for. Okay, hopefully that's clear as mud, and we can move on. All right, Isaiah chapter 58. Isaiah 50, you laugh. I'm going to get all kinds of comments proving that was clear as mud. So... Trust me, the more I think I clarify things absolutely crystal clear, the more I find out it was still mud. Okay, Isaiah chapter 58. If you ever ask me a question about whether or not you should do something on Shabbat, we'll probably end up right here. This is, to me, the best two verses for the right approach, context, and mindset when asking the question, is this okay on Shabbat? Okay, right here in Isaiah 58. Now, verse 13 and 14, the last two verses. So if you need these verses in the future, just remember Isaiah 58, and it's the last two verses. You don't have to remember the verse numbers. Just remember Isaiah 58. Go to the end of the chapter. Okay? If you do turn back your foot from Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my set-apart day, and shall call the Sabbath a delight, a set-apart day of Yahweh, esteemed and shall esteem it, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words. Then, don't you love these if-then statements? If you do all these things, then you shall delight yourself in Yahweh, and I shall cause you to ride on the heights of the earth and feed you with the inheritance of Yaakov, your father, for the mouth of Yahweh has spoken. The mouth of Yahweh has spoken. Now, he says, look, if you would turn your foot from doing on the Sabbath what you want, your pleasure, your thoughts, your own ways, your own pleasures, your own words, etc. That's really asking an awful lot of you, isn't it? I mean, it's not even your, he says, not even seeking your own words. He wants you to focus on him completely. That's the point. Okay, the point is, can you focus on him completely for a whole day? For just one day. That's not even the whole day. You're going to sleep part of it, right? We talked about this already. So now when we look at this, now let's look at what it says here. First of all, you need to turn your foot from doing your pleasure on Yahweh's set apart day. You have to make a choice, a decision to choose to not do certain things. You have to choose to not do your pleasure on his day. Remember, we talked about this over and over again. Now we have a verse that helps make that point. If you normally ride your bike, jog, go to the gym, do whatever, swim, I don't care what you do that's your pleasure, and you can try to spin, well, if I go to this beautiful crystal clear lake and I enjoy the creation that he created the lake and I enjoy that he created the trees around it and I'm going to do my laps, you're still seeking your pleasure. See, but you'll spin that to say, but I'm doing it while... Now, I don't doubt that you will still appreciate the creation. So I'm not changing that thought. I mean, I'm not going to call you a liar, that you are not at the same time, but you're doing it your way, making it your pleasure. And he's saying, look, if you will turn your foot away from doing it what you want on his day. He says, we are to call the Shabbat a delight. By the way, that's the word oneg, delight. That's what we call our meal that we do after services. We call it the oneg or delight. He says, we are to actually call Shabbat a delight. Don't whine about it, complain about it. Oh, Shabbat, and I want to do my stuff, and I can't do it, and I'm going to miss out on something. No. It's got to be called a delight. But he's not going to let me do what I want. Good. Find a way to delight in him and not just delight in yourself. He says, not doing your own ways. Okay, so this can't be doing what you want, your way, your thing. It's got to be doing his stuff, his way, his thing. Not doing your own way. So you don't get to choose how to keep Shabbat and decide how you want to, you know, what you decide is right and wrong about Shabbat and what's okay about Shabbat. He does. Nor finding your own pleasure. Again, that goes back to the first part with turning your foot away from doing your pleasure. Now, listen, this one's a little tough. Nor speaking your own words. See, I've caught people on Shabbat, starting with myself. Okay, I'll be the first one to raise my hand. I'll wear this shirt. But I've caught people, including myself, who can get really caught up real quickly in conversations that they really enjoy and really get them going that have nothing to do with him, have nothing to do with Yahweh. But it's our pleasure, it's our words. And so we can easily, I've seen people have conversations at Shabbat, not recently, previous congregations I've worked with where, you know, the whole conversation was about the football game or the baseball game or the basketball game. Actually, it was one congregation where I knew that they watched it on Friday night because I could tell that the 20-year-old youths and older were talking about the playoff game. It was a basketball game, and they were talking about it, and it was from the night before that they watched. And they spent all Shabbat Oneg, all during the Oneg, talking about the ball game. Or here in the South, you can find people spending all Shabbat talking about their college teams. Even though the game wasn't on Shabbat necessarily, but aren't they mostly on Shabbat? Or they're trying to catch a little peek of it in their phone and getting their updates and focused on the game. Look, you're that into the game, tape the game, record it, watch it when you get home. It's not a big deal. It's only a game, right? He says, but not speaking your own words. I've seen people spend a whole lot of time talking about their job or the situation at work or whatever. I mean, we can find that. Or their health. Okay, if I ask you how you are, by the way, most people when they do that really don't want to know how you are. So, you know, so don't really actually, that's not an opening now to spend 2 hours explaining about everything wrong with you. But if you do have stuff that they've been talking to you about and they're aware that you might be going through and have health issues and that kind of thing, you may say, look, it's going to take a while. It's going to be lengthy. Let's talk about it after Shabbat. I appreciate that you're interested, but let's talk about it after Shabbat. What would be appropriate is something like we've prayed about something like your health or your job, and I may come up to you and ask you how that's going, and you can tell me, not good. I'll tell you after Shabbat. You can say, hey, it's great. I'd love to share with you what Yahweh did. Okay, now the miracle part, that would be appropriate. If we prayed and Yahweh intervened, that would be appropriate. Now we're talking about him. But if something hasn't happened yet and things are still bad or getting worse or whatever it is, well, that would be something that could wait till after Shabbat is over. Does that make sense? Okay. He says, if you'll do these things, then you'll delight yourself in Yahweh. Then. So we have to do those things first. I think that's really important. Now, there are people that will claim that this section is referring to, in chapter 58, is referring to specifically Yom Kippur. But I've read the chapter a few times over recently just to make sure that I'm looking at the context. And I still do not agree with that. I don't think this is, by the time you get to verses 13 and 14, the context is completely linked just to Yom Kippur. Okay? I don't see that here. Even in verse 7, it talks about, is it not to share your bread with the hungry and then you bring your house to the poor, etc. There's a lot of things going on here that are not connected specifically to something like Yom Kippur. It's verse 3 that messes them up. It says, why have we fasted and you have not seen? Why have we afflicted our beings? You took no note. Well, that could be referring to something like Yom Kippur, but that certainly is not the limiter. There are other verses after that that are more clear to say that this is not linked to just something like Yom Kippur. Okay, now, because verse 5 says, is it a fast that I have chosen, a day for a man to afflict his being? Is it a... Okay, so there, that looks like that could be talking about it, but then the whole context here, it takes it further. Takes it further. Now, the other thing that I would want to say is, when we see instructions about Shabbats or holy days that are treated as Shabbats, there may be some things that are added additionally that are unique to a one day, like Yom Kippur, you add the afflicting yourselves. But there are other things that are common to all of them. And you see that expressed in multiple places. And that's where you see the idea of bearing no burdens on the Sabbath day and things like the not doing work on the Sabbaths, etc., that are common to all Sabbaths. The annual ones that are connected to holy days as well as the weekly one. And so even if this is adding the little piece here that could be connected somewhat to Yom Kippur, by the way, unless you're a Jew who actually understands the traditions of Jews and actually that which is written in your scriptures, there are many days of fasting that are mentioned in scripture. And so to just automatically conclude that when you see the idea of fasting as being only Yom Kippur related, that would be an easy place to fall into a ditch, because that's absolutely not true in Scripture. There are other fasts, and by the way, there's lots of places where they talk about afflicting themselves. You know, the whole idea of fasting in sackcloth and ashes and afflicting yourselves when you're mourning and when you're upset and when you're trying to repent. So there's a lot more to that than just saying this clearly is Yom Kippur. So anyway, I wanted to throw that out there because people will use that as an excuse to say that verse 13 and 14 only apply to Yom Kippur. And I think that's a dangerous thought process. Even if it turns out to be true, it's a high-risk move to say, I'm going to ignore verse 13 and 14 on the weekly Sabbath because I think that only applies to Yom Kippur. Hopefully you will see that too. It's not worth the risk. It's not worth the risk. Remember, my job, look, if I'm an anointed appointed and if I've been put in a place of spiritual leadership, then that means I'm also required to stand at the gates and warn you about things. And so I'm telling you right now, trying to use verse 13 and 14 only for Yom Kippur is risky. That is not advisable. It is definitely risky. Let's go to chapter 56. We'll stay in Isaiah. Chapter 56. And verse 1. Thus said Yahweh, guard right ruling and do righteousness, for near is my deliverance to come and my righteousness to be revealed. Blessed is the man who does this and the son of man who lays hold on it, guarding the Sabbath lest he profane it and guarding his hand from doing evil. And let not the son of the foreigner who has joined himself to Yahweh speak, saying, Yahweh is certainly separated from me from his people. Nor let the eunuch say, look, I am a dry tree. For thus said Yahweh to the eunuchs who guard my Sabbaths and have chosen what pleases me and hold fast to my covenant, To them I shall give in my house and within my walls a place and a name better than that of sons and daughters. I give them an everlasting name that is not cut off. Verse 6, also the sons of the foreigner who join themselves to Yahweh to serve him and to love the name of Yahweh, to be his servants, all who guard the Sabbath and not profane it and hold fast to my covenant, he says, them I shall bring to my set-apart mountain and let them rejoice in my house of prayer. Their burnt offerings and their slaughterings are accepted on my altar, for my house is called a house of prayer for all peoples. The Master Yahweh who gathers the outcasts of Israel declares, I gather still others to him besides those who are gathered to him. Okay, there's an awful lot going on in here. There's an awful lot going on in here. So first, let me just connect up something from verse 8. When he says that the Master, he says, I gather others besides those that are gathered. Hold your place here. But in John chapter 10 and verse 16, Yeshua says pretty much the exact same thing about himself. In John chapter 10 and verse 16, he says, and other sheep I have which are not of this fold, I have to bring them as well, and they shall hear my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. And so he's saying almost the exact same thing here that we are seeing in Isaiah chapter 56. Now, in 56, in verse 3 and verse 6, it talks about the foreigner, the sons of the foreigner. Here is the Hebrew word nechar, the same word that we see in Exodus chapter 12, when we talked about the three different words for stranger there in Exodus 12. So here is the word nechar. Nechar means an alienated person. The term really refers to two different kinds of people. One is an Israelite who has become apostate. In other words, one who worships idols, desecrates the Sabbath, or denies the validity of any of the Torah's commandments. And remember, he says, those that I have scattered, I'm going to gather. He says, I'm going to bring back the scattered, the remnants, the scattered of Israel. Okay. So he says that in verse 8, right? I am Yahweh, the Master Yahweh, who gathers the outcasts. Well, why were they outcasts? Because they became apostate for breaking commandments, for worshiping idols. This also could refer to a non-Israelite who may be traveling through Eretz Israel, the land of Israel. So he's saying that there's others even who are not actually lost Israelites that I'm also going to be bringing in. This is the sheep, you know, other sheep I have that are not of this fold. Okay, includes those that would, now notice the word there says, those that would join themselves. Now we see that joining self thing in Ezekiel 37 with the coming together of the two sticks. Okay, Yehuda and their companions, as well as Ephraim and his companions. We also see this in Romans 11 and the grafting into the olive tree. Okay, so we see this idea of joining themselves. We talk about this quite extensively in the teaching called Discovering Your Identity, part of the CC 101 program, right, the Covenant Community 101. And so let's understand what this is saying. You're saying, look, blessed is the man who's going to do what I say. He said, guard my right rulings, verse 1, do righteousness, for near is my deliverance to come, my righteousness is to be revealed. By the way, I love when he says things like do righteousness or do rightly, because righteousness is something you do. It's not simply something, as Christianity would have you believe, that's imputed to you because Yeshua did it. Now, I'm not mocking that at all. You still need what he did. But there's a part of it that you need to do. And he tells you, do right. Basically, do righteousness means do what's right. How do we know what's right? Well, he defines what's right. It's not really complicated. He's the definer of what is right. And why do you need to do what's right? Because his deliverance is coming. It's near. Then he said, blessed is the man who does this. That's the key. You want to be blessed? He said, blessed is the man who does this, who guards right ruling, does righteousness. Okay? And he says, and the Son of Man who lays hold of it, guarding the Sabbath day, lest he profane it, and guarding his hand from doing evil. See, he could have mentioned any of the 613 commandments here. He mentions specifically the Sabbath day. Why? Because we learned in Exodus chapter 31 that it's a sign between him and his people, the Vishamru, right? And the children of Israel shall keep the Shabbat and guard the Shabbat throughout their generations as a sign. So that's why he keeps mentioning it over and over. He said, look, if you can't get this one right, then what's the point of all the other ones? This is the sign. This is the time when we get to meet and I get to work with you. I get to refresh you. So this is, not that I want to put a hierarchy, but this is like the highest of the commandments. He brings it up everywhere and every writer talks about it. So he says, look, and let not even the stranger, not even the Israelite who's apostate or the true, actual non-Israelite stranger say, well, Yahweh has certainly separated me from his people. Look, you know, I'm a dry tree, and et cetera, et cetera. You know, so what's the point? I mean, I'm there's nothing here for me. So why am I even bothering? And the answer is, you're bothering because Yahweh says that you're going to be able to get a name that's even greater than that of sons and daughters. I want to read you a verse, if I can find it quickly. In Hosea chapter 9, in verse 16, it says, Ephraim has been smitten, their root is dried up, and yet they yield no fruit. Even if they bear children, I shall put to death the precious ones of their womb. See, he refers to Ephraim and in other places as being one that's dried up. Okay, what does the verse here in Isaiah say? It says, he says, nor let the eunuch say, look, I am a dry tree. So the eunuch a lot of times is referring to the scattered Ephraim. Okay, we see that consistently in Scripture, and I just wanted to read you that verse out of Hosea chapter 9. I should write that down in my notes here just so it's here. This is not just straightforward language. It's referring you to things that Israel would have already understood. When he refers to the eunuch and the dry tree, he's not talking about true strangers. He's talking about lost Israelites. He's talking about those of the northern kingdom, the lost 10 tribes. But he's also talking about actual real strangers. And what is he saying? He says, look, if you join yourselves to Yahweh, verse 6, to serve him and love the name of Yahweh, the authority of Yahweh, that's the key, to love his authority. We whine and complain about sometimes, and often maybe even, when his authority gets in the way of what we want. Which authority are you going to listen to? Oh, but my boss is going to fire me. He's an authority if I don't come in on Saturday, on Sabbath. Yahweh says there's bigger ramifications than that. What are you afraid of? Losing a job or losing your salvation, your future, your deliverance? What are you afraid of losing? I mean, you can get another job. You're not going to get another future. You make a choice, and you got to live and die with that choice. This is important. So he says, look, but if you will, he says to those who say, well, we've been separated. That's the other thing is when he says, Yahweh has separated us, true strangers could feel that way, but certainly the lost Israelites can feel that way. Yahweh separated them and cast them to the four corners of the earth, scattered them amongst all the nations. And he said, look, don't whine and complain. It's not about what Yahweh did. It's about what you're choosing to do. You can choose at any point to join yourselves to Yahweh through your decisions, through your actions. Yes, he punished us all. Yes, he scattered us all. But he also gave you the opportunity to read his word, embrace what he said, and then to submit yourself to where you can serve him and love his authority, and then as servants, guard his Sabbath and not profane it and hold fast to. Notice it says, in addition, this is part of holding fast to his covenant. What's the covenant? We say this all the time. Exodus 19, verses 5 and 6. If you will do everything I say, I will take you as my people. I made it real simple there. But that's essentially what he said. If you agree to do everything I say, I agree to take you and make you my special people. That's your covenant. So it's not just about the Sabbath. And we do have groups out there, the Adventists are one of them, that really focus only on the Sabbath more than anything else. Now, most of them are vegetarians, so the kosher thing is not really an issue. They're not going to eat pork anyway, but the thing is they've made it like a one or two trick pony. And they're not the only ones. There are other Seventh-day churches out there, okay? But what about the Sabbath day included in now the feast days? That's all part of the same place. What about all the other Torah issues? The Torah is not just one issue. And you can't make it a one-issue thing. Look, your average Christian believes in keeping 9 of the 10 commandments. They think they're serious. They think you would absolutely be wrong to commit murder or adultery or steal and all the other stuff, murder. But yet, why are we picking and choosing? He says, look, guard my right rulings. Guard my righteousness, all of it. You know, it's hysterical to me how many people will say to me over and over again when they're brand new to all of this, well, I'm just trying to figure out how much of the Old Testament transferred forward into the New Testament. I'll make it simple for you, all of it. The reason you're struggling to figure it out is because you're trying to find something that doesn't exist. It all transfers. There is no separating it out. As a matter of fact, there is no Old Testament, New Testament page in your book the way it was written. A publisher put that in there just to kind of give it a way of breaking it up. Okay, when Messiah came and spoke to the Jewish community, this was just the next step in the flow. It wasn't a brand new thing. It was built on everything that the prophets had said. Everything that came before. As a matter of fact, he assumed that the people he was talking to understood all of that. That they were totally aware and understood all of that stuff. Let's look at Ezekiel. Let's go to Ezekiel chapter 20. And let me just look at that real quickly. I may skip that and go to something else. Ezekiel 20, verse 12. And I also gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between them and me. We know this already. Also, we read that in Exodus. To know that I am Yahweh who sets them apart. So the Sabbath is part of the connection that lets us to communicate and reminds us who it is that we're worshiping and who sets us apart. But the house of Israel rebelled against me in the wilderness. They did not walk in my laws. They rejected my right rulings, which if a man does, he shall live by them. And they greatly profaned my Sabbaths. Then I said I would pour out my wrath on them in the wilderness to consume them. But I acted for my name's sake, not to profane it before the Gentiles, before whose eyes I had brought them out. Remember, Moses had that conversation with Yahweh. He said, hey, if you destroy all these guys, what's it going to do to your name? He says, and I myself also lifted my hand in an oath to them in the wilderness not to bring them into the land which I had given them flowing with milk and honey, the splendor of all the lands, because they rejected my right rulings and did not walk in my laws, and they profaned my Sabbaths, for their heart went after their idols. So what he's saying is, when you put anything before him, that is going to be the cause of breaking Sabbaths. In other words, the reason you break a Sabbath is because something has come up in a higher authority than he has in your heart and in your mind. You have elevated something to an idol status. You have given someone authority that belongs only to him. But you don't understand. My boss will fire me. I do understand your boss will fire you. So what? I mean, I must have had in my life, I don't know, 20, 30 different jobs. It's just a job. You'll get another one. Or is your creator not big enough and powerful enough and able to give you a different job or a better job? As a matter of fact, I say this every time, and you all know it's true. Most of you who say that to me hate your job anyway. Most. Not everybody. But almost every time a person will come to me and say, well, you know, the boss just changed everything, and now he wants us to work on Saturday. I'm like, but wait a minute. I've heard you whine about that job for 8 months now. Maybe this is an answer to prayer, not a punishment. Ever think of it that way? Because all of a sudden you love this job. Really? That's not what I've been hearing out of your mouth for 8 months, a year, whatever, longer. Oh, I wish Yahweh just give me another job. Well, maybe he's answering your prayer. He says, but look, rather than just wipe them out, he let them live through a generation of life so that they would all just die off, so that would not be as obvious a punishment to the people watching from the outside. He said, but look, I did this because they rejected, because their hearts went after their idols, their hearts. That's why the heart of the matter teaching is so important, because this is a heart issue. You know, Deuteronomy 8, we're going to read that at the very end, but you know in that verse it says he wants to know whether it's in your heart to keep his commandments or not. In Deuteronomy 8, 2, right? Verse 17, and my eye pardoned them from destroying them, and I did not make an end of them in the wilderness. And I said to their children in the wilderness, do not walk in the laws of your fathers, nor observe their rulings, nor defile yourselves with their idols. I am Yahweh, your Elohim, walk in my laws and guard my right rulings and do them and set apart my Sabbaths, and they shall be a sign between me and you to know that I am Yahweh, your Elohim. There it is again. So we've read this in a few places. He says, but the children rebelled against me. They did not walk in my laws and my right rulings. They did not guard to do them, which if a man does, he shall live by them. They profaned my Sabbaths, or resolved to pour out my wrath on them to complete my displeasure against them in the wilderness. But I held back my hand and acted for my name's sake, not to profane it before the eyes of the Gentiles, before whose eyes I had brought them out. Also, I myself lifted my hand in an oath to those in the wilderness to scatter them among the Gentiles and disperse them throughout their lands, because they had not done my right rulings, and they rejected my laws, and they profaned my Sabbaths, and their eyes were on their father's idols. In other words, we've inherited lies. We're doing things just the way the other generations did it before us. That was the way they focused, and that was where their fear and their doubt was, and I'm going to just inherit all of that. So this is very clear and stark warning about, again, you can see how Isaiah 58 is in here. They did what they wanted, not what I said. It wasn't my ways, my right rule, my, he says over and over again. Not yours. He goes, do it my way, not your way. Because my way brings life. Your way brings fleeting pleasure, maybe. You might enjoy it for the moment. Ezekiel 44, Yechezkel, Ezekiel 44, and in verse 15. I'm going to read verse 15 just for the context so we know who he's talking to. So verse 15, it says, but the priest, the Levites, the son of Tzadok, who guarded the duty of my set-apart place when the children of Israel went astray from me, they shall draw near to me to serve me and shall stand before me to bring to me the fat and the blood, declares Master Yahweh. So just so we drop down out of verse 23, we know who he's talking to. He's talking to the priests, those who are standing in authority to represent him. Now notice what he says in verse 23. He says, and they are to teach my people the difference between the set apart and the profane, and make them know what is unclean and clean. And they are to stand as judges in dispute and judge it according to my right rulings. And they are to guard my Torah and my laws and all my appointed festivals and set apart my Sabbaths. So here we see that the priests were to instruct the people. It doesn't say the Ruach is going to instruct the people. It doesn't say that he's going to instruct the people directly. He said, I'm going to work through human instruments, those who are set apart and appointed and anointed to be the spiritual leadership of the time. And that they are to instruct the people and to stand in judgment. Now, take that understanding, and now let's read something that probably has given a lot of people a lot of grief in Colossians chapter 2, which is used often to justify breaking Torah because people don't understand what's going on in Colossians. But now that I just gave you context, let's understand what's happening in Colossians. Okay? Colossians chapter 2. You all know where I'm going here. In verse 16, let no one therefore judge you in eating or drinking or in respect of a festival, a new moon, or Sabbath, which are a shadow of what's to come, but the body of the Messiah. So what is he saying here in this? He's saying, look, only those, like we just read about in Ezekiel, have the authority to stand in judgment about things like new moons and festivals and Sabbaths and eating and drinking. He's saying, stop listening to everybody else. Now, if you're reading Colossians 2, 16 and 17 and have no idea about anything like in Ezekiel, you would miss that, wouldn't you? But it's not just in Ezekiel where he says that. There's many places where he says, these are those that I put in place to instruct the people. These are those who I put in place to judge the issues of the people, the matters that they face. And so I don't know how else to make that point clear, but then you come here to Colossians, and Shaul is saying, look, stop being judged by your family members and your friends and other people that you know. Judgment is in the body, and the body has an authority structure. So it's not just everybody in the body that judges. Because people say, well, so the judgment is by the body. I'm in the body. No, but the body has a structure. I know that people want to fight against that and fight against that and fight against it, but the body has a structure. Okay, if you look at a body, okay, and then you look at another body and another body, generally speaking, are the arms in the same place on everybody? Are the legs in the same place? Is there a head in the same place? I know parents have said to a child, I have no idea where your head is at. But it's in the same place. There's a structure to the body. And so this is important. So when we look at something like Colossians that deals with Sabbaths, the most likely thing happening here is that they were being judged by a lot of these are Gentiles coming into and joining themselves into the body. They were being judged, as many of you are, by their family members. Anybody have family members that are not keeping new moons, feasts, and Sabbaths judging you? So that any idea that that's possibly what's going on in the Colossian community? He's saying, look, stop letting those people judge you that are not supposed to be in a position to judge you. They don't have the authority or the right to do it. So stop submitting to that authority. Very important. He says, the issue here is the embracing of commands and teachings of men as being equal in authority to Torah. Look what happens in 20 to 23. If then you died with the Messiah from the elementary matters of the world, why, as though living in the world, do you subject yourself to regulations? Do not touch, do not taste, do not handle, which are all to perish with use. Let me stop there. That's where most Christians stop. Oh, that's all that Torah stuff. No, the rest of the verse says these are according to the commands and teachings of men. Everything that just came before, that last part of verse 22, says that we're referring to is teachings of men. Men's teachings about don't touch, don't taste, don't handle. Not Yahweh's verses. Not Yahweh's instructions. He says, according to the commandments and teachings of men, these indeed have an appearance of wisdom and self-imposed worship. Self-imposed worship, humiliation and harsh treatment of the body of no value at all, only the satisfaction of the flesh. Have you ever not seen certain Christian groups, Catholic groups especially, where they will flail themselves and hit themselves and all these... That's the kind of stuff we're talking about here. The self-imposed things that man has imposed and claims makes them somehow more righteous. You know, Paul was dealing with a problem that is often dealt with everywhere, which is people saying, I'm more righteous than you because. In one place you see that about eating. Well, I'm more righteous than you because I only eat vegetables on Friday, or I only eat fish on Friday, right? The Catholic thing. Or I do this. Somehow this makes me more righteous than you. That's what's going on here at the Colossians, saying, look, stop dealing with all this stuff. The elementary things, the elementary matters of the world, not the elementary matters of Yahweh. He says, look, and then you died with Messiah from the elementary matters of the world, not the elementary matters of Yahweh. And then he continues to say, look, I'm talking about those that are the commandments and teachings of men, not the commandments and teachings of Yahweh. So hopefully that finally, for a lot of you, will clarify Colossians chapter 2. Because that's something that comes up all the time with people. Oh, well, you know, it says here about don't let anybody judge you about how you keep the Sabbath. Well, you shouldn't let anybody judge you about how you keep the Sabbath, except those who are in authority to do so. And so if you're in the body and you're submitted under an authority, then the only one who has the authority to do so is that authority, is that person. Of course, that's part of why nobody wants to be under authority, and there's nobody to do it. So there's nobody that can come up to you and say, I don't think you ought to be doing that. That's breaking the Sabbath. Well, you're judging me. No. It's my job to guard the gate, to help keep you safe. What do shepherds do? Keep the flock safe. Okay? Not only from wolves and other animals, but from them, you know, running astray on their own and end up, you know, getting hurt. And so they're there to help keep you safe and help, you know, what do? They kind of say, don't go that far. Oh, no, move over here and move over here, right? They guide the sheep. They don't let them go too far to the left or too far to the right. They kind of keep them moving. They hedge them in to a limited space where it's safe and they can grow and they can flourish, right? Luke chapter 6, verse 1. And it came to be on the Sabbath that he went through the grain fields, and his taught ones were plucking the heads of grain and were eating, rubbing them in their hands. And some of the Pharisees said to him, why are you doing what is not right to do on Shabbat? Now, I don't want to get into the whole next piece that comes on with David and the showbread and everything else. Let's just deal with these first two verses. The Pharisees are claiming that what the disciples and Yeshua was doing in picking the grain and eating it was breaking the Sabbath somehow. They were trying to make this argument that they were breaking Sabbath. So I want to read you something from a book that I have. It's called The Sabbath by Dayan Dr. I. Grunfeld. Okay, A Guide to Its Understanding and Observance. And this is from a Jewish book. This is a book that I've had for a very long time. Okay? When I referenced that, there was a little booklet that I read that kind of helped me with Shabbat, at least the mindset. This may have been the one, I'm not sure. But it's probably the one that's this small. But what I use this one for now is that it lists what's known as the 39 things that are the way they would call the melacha. Okay, remember we talked about work being melacha? So this is what they understand as the 39 things that fall under the category called melacha. And so these things are listed as plowing, sowing, reaping, sheaf making, threshing, winnowing, selecting, sifting, grinding, kneading, baking, sheep shearing, bleaching, combining raw materials, dyeing, spinning, weaving operations, separating into threads, tying a knot, untying a knot, sewing, tearing, trapping or hunting, slaughtering, skinning, tanning, scraping pelts, marking out, cutting to shape, writing, erasing, building, demolishing, kindling a fire, extinguishing, the final hammer blow as to put the final finishing touches on something you made, and carrying from the private to the public domain and vice versa. Those are your 39 things that the Jewish community understands you cannot do on Shabbat. Now, these come from the ideas of things that would have been necessary to build the tabernacle. Because they were told to keep Shabbat in the same context of the time when they were given instruction to build the tabernacle. And so they came up with all the things that would have been necessary of the work necessary to build the tabernacle to come up with these items. So what exactly was it that Yeshua and the disciples were being accused of breaking the Sabbath with? So I want to read to you so we understand. It's the idea of reaping. So I'm going to read to you what it says here and how they would have understood it in Yeshua's day. So reaping is the class, this is a class of items, by the way. It's not a specific thing. It's a whole area called reaping. All of these 39 things are sort of classes of things that you can do, you know, a classification of things that break Torah. So here's what reaping is, okay? This class comprises every activity by which any growing plant is severed from its place of growth, including cutting or plucking flowers, grass, leaves, twigs, berries, or fruits from trees, bushes, etc., growing in the ground or in a flower pot, okay? So this is kind of where we're going here. So what do you see happening is, you see that the disciples were plucking, which is part of harvesting, but they weren't harvesting. They were actually taking what they plucked, rubbing it in their hands so they can get the grain and they could eat it. So they were just eating. Now, had they been doing that and taking more of it and putting it in a pouch, that would have been a problem. If they were doing it to gather it as part of like, you know, let's say you were walking by your apple grove with apple trees on it just for sake, and you saw some ones that had just fallen and they were on the ground and you didn't want them to rot, you would say, oh, I'm just going to go pick them up and gather them. Well, that wouldn't be appropriate on Shabbat. However, if you saw one and you wanted to wipe it off and just eat it, that would have been totally okay. Because now we're not doing work for production, for any of that kind of a thing. So, but see, by the tradition of the Jews, and now I've read to you, so this is the same tradition they hold today, comes from this going all the way back, that the Pharisees were accusing Yeshua and the disciples of doing. He said, look, they were plucking the grain, plucking the heads of the grain, and they were eating them. That's the key. The Pharisee says they're breaking the Sabbath, and Yeshua's like, no, they're not. No, they're not. But I wanted you to kind of get a sense of where these things are coming from. So there is this 39 things. I mean, the 39 things include things like if I gave you, let's say I gave you some trail mix, okay, and it's got nuts in it, and it's got dried fruit in it. You could, if you wanted to, just pick out some of the nuts you want and eat them. But what you couldn't do is put them out on a plate and separate them and then eat them. Because that's sorting and sifting. That's what they would say. That's the fences around the law, fences around the fences, etc. That's what they would say. I'm not telling you that's Torah. That's the traditions of men. Okay? So if you happen to be like in a trail mix and you happen to just not like cranberries, you couldn't just take the cranberries out and put them on the side and start separating things. You would just have to eat around them. That's the Jewish tradition. I'm not in line with that tradition. But understand that if you keep that tradition, you're not breaking anything. But if you break that tradition, you're also not breaking anything. It's only a tradition. Okay, let's understand that. We'll talk more about traditions here in a minute. Let's finish off this whole idea before we get to the conclusion by looking at the ox in a ditch, because this is critical in Luke chapter 14. Because this comes up an awful lot too. And then we'll try to wrap this all up in like 5 seconds. All right. We're already at an hour. I don't know how much time I got. And it came to be, chapter 14, verse 1 of Luke. It came to be as he went into the house of one of the rulers of the Pharisees to eat bread on the Sabbath, that they were watching him closely and see there was a certain man before him suffering from dropsy. And Yeshua, responding, spoke to those learned in the Torah and the Pharisees, saying, "Is it right to heal on the Sabbath?" And they were silent. So taking hold of him, he healed him and let him go. And to them he said, "Which of you, having a donkey or an ox that has fallen in a pit, shall not immediately pull him out on the Sabbath day?" How come it's always the ox? The donkey never gets any credit here. I mean, it's always the ox in a ditch. And they were unable to answer him regarding these matters. And he spoke a parable to them who were invited. Okay, so I'm not going to go through the parable. I'm just going to go through the idea of the ox in a ditch. So why do we pull the ox out of a ditch on the Sabbath day? Because if we don't, it will die, most likely. It will hurt itself badly in the ditch. And so we pull it out. So what we now want to make sure not to do, and I hear this all the time, so please stop doing it. Any inconvenient thing that you forgot or is gonna that you might need to do on the Sabbath because of some inconvenience is not the ox in a ditch. Unless somebody is going to be actually injured in some way or die, something that critical, it's not an ox in a ditch moment. I had someone say to me, "Well, you know, I woke up this morning," this is after they got to Sabbath services and telling me this on Shabbat at services, "Well, you know, I woke up this morning and realized I forgot to buy milk, and so the kids needed milk for their cereal, so I had to go out and get it. Oh, I guess that was like my ox in a ditch." I was like, "Why, were your children going to die?" Unless they were going to die, this was no ox in a ditch. And so let's stop doing that. Let's stop making, "Oh, well, my boss is going to fire me if I don't go in, so that must be my ox in a ditch." No, if you get fired, you're also not going to die. You might think you are, but you're not. So let's be careful that we're not using that ox in a ditch as an excuse to do anything and everything we want to do on Shabbat that we shouldn't be doing. Okay? It's only when it is critically life-threatening or can cause permanent damage, like physically, like it would to the ox. That's why if you get injured on the Sabbath, yes, go to the hospital. Okay? All right, conclusion. Let me wrap some things up really quickly here. Let's kind of, hopefully I can get through this very quickly. Number one, traditions. Okay, there are some traditions that are connected to Sabbath keeping in our Jewish community with our Jewish brothers. These are not required in any way, shape, or form, but some of them are very nice to do. Remember, I said if you were doing the 39 laws, you would not be breaking anything. If you broke one of the 39 laws, you wouldn't be breaking anything. Same thing with Shabbat traditions like lighting candles or having a kiddush and motzi, right? The wine and the bread that Jewish community does. I'm not talking about communion. I'm talking about the Jewish community has a blessing over wine and over bread at every one of their big communal events, especially on Shabbat. So these are good traditions. They're just traditions. So don't feel guilty or bad, and don't make anybody feel guilty or bad if they're not lighting candles or having the challah and the wine. This is not required anywhere in Scripture. So just remember that as you go through these things. I've had people really attack some people over the fact that they do it or don't do it. It's a tradition. If you don't like it, don't do it. If you love it, do it. Just don't raise it up to be Torah when it's not Torah. In my house, I'm going to say this to everyone. We don't light candles every week. We don't do Kiddush and Motzi every week. We got a lot going on, getting ready for Sabbath services and other things. It's enough if we can actually get the whole family to sit down and have dinner. We have our traditions. You have your traditions. That's okay. Don't judge anybody because they're not doing the same traditions you do. Okay? That's very important. Sunset issues. Okay, I looked up some things to deal with sunset issues. The people are talking about, what if you live someplace where the sun never sets or where it never rises? Okay, so you never have any sun, like in the land of the midnight sun where it's there all the time, or in the winter where there's no sun. What are you going to do? Okay, a lot of Jewish tradition, I read about that to see what they would do. Some of it it's all traditions. So I'm going to just give you my take on it. Their tradition is either to use Jerusalem time or to use the nearest city to where you are, where they're actually able to do it. My thought is, I don't have a problem with using Jerusalem time. I would say that obviously it becomes a challenge if sundown is like almost midnight and then sunrise is midnight and 10 minutes. Okay? And so that doesn't give you much downtime. So what I would say is this. Look, if you're in a place where the Sabbath really is at extremes as far as daylight and darkness, contact an anointed appointed for counsel and guidance based on where you are in your situation. Because this is going to bring us to the next issue. Genesis 49:10 and Psalms 60 and verse 7. Let's look at those real quickly. Hopefully I can squeeze this in before we're done. Okay, Genesis 49:10. I want to make sure we're understanding these two verses very well. 49:10 says, "The scepter shall not turn aside from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh comes, and to him is the obedience of the peoples." Okay, 49:10, which translates the word as the scepter over, okay, listen, it translates as the scepter over the law-giving authority as relates to the chukim. The word there comes from the word mechokiki, or mechokek, actually, I think is the one in Genesis 49. Mechokiki is in chapter 60. The chok, or the chukim, basically are laws that have aspects that go beyond normal rational understanding shall not depart from Judah. Those who have authority over the laws that we don't necessarily easily understand what to do. These are called the chukim. Okay, you see this things like the red heifer. Nobody can understand why this thing with the red heifer is important, but it's important. Okay, so stuff that falls into the category of, I really don't know what to do in this situation. Those are the chukim. The word there that's being translated scepter is the same word that has the root word of chok, mechokek, okay? Now, we look at this now in Psalm 60 and verse 7. You're going to see a very similar thing. In Psalm, the 60th Psalm and verse 7, Tehillim 60 verse 7, that's actually mizmor is actually a word for psalm. Okay, 60 and verse 7, it says, "Gilad is mine and Manasseh is mine and Ephraim is the defense of my head. Yehuda is my lawgiver." By the way, there the word is the same word that could be correctly translated as scepter. In other words, has authority over as relating to these specific things, the chukim. That's my interpretation based on the root of the Hebrew word. Is that he's saying, look, Judah's not just going to be ruler over you generally, but they're the ones that you're supposed to go to when you don't know what to do. And so there's an authority structure there. The leadership, now, that's because Judah was the visible leadership up to this point and going through. By the way, this relates the same thing to Deuteronomy 17. When there's a matter that's too hard for you, you go to the leadership at the time and you say, this is a chukim to me. I don't know what to do. I don't have a rational, logical understanding of what the right thing is to do here. So what I'm saying is allow these verses to give us guidance that we should be seeking guidance from those who are anointed and appointed with authority over the chukim. They have the job and responsibility to interpret. What do you do when it's not simple and obvious on what to do? Okay, so that's my encouragement. I actually have verses to back that up. I could have added Deuteronomy 17 to that as well. Okay? So let me just finish with some closing questions. And I got to do this quickly. Do you really want to walk in truth? Or do you just want things to be the way you want it to be? Can you handle the truth? I'm going to sound like, you know, you can't handle the truth. In Deuteronomy 8:2, it says that we are to be humble, tested, and proved whether it's in our heart to keep the commandments. Are you ready to be tested? So you can prove whether or not it is in your heart to keep the commandments or not? You know, in the Shema and the Vahafta, Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 9, it's, are you ready to walk this out? You know, we've been doing this Vahafta challenge for 25 days now. Are you ready to walk that out, loving him with all your heart, might, being, everything you do when you're working, when you're walking by the way, when you go to bed, when you rise up, everything? Because that's doesn't leave any room for anything else. What about the third commandment? As a child of the living Elohim, bearing his name, what message are those around you who are watching what you are doing, what message are they receiving regarding the observance of the Shabbatot? Are you bringing the name of Yahweh glory and honor or shame? Because they're looking at you. They're watching you. And are we guarding? Here's the last question I want you to leave with. Are we guarding, remembering Yahweh's Shabbatot, his Sabbaths? Are we guarding, remembering what our family, friends, and bosses want and guarding their feelings and their desires? Who are you guarding? Who are you remembering? Who are you protecting? What are you watching over? Who are you putting as a priority? So I want to leave us with that. Look, the Sabbath is critical. It's the sign. It's the key. Now, if you keep the Sabbath and nothing else, that's not enough. But it's sort of that transitional point. If you can get the Sabbath right, you'll get everything else right because your heart will start focusing on him in a way that is correct, which will lead you to get the rest of it right. It's that pivotal moment. So let's go ahead and pray as we and adjust our minds and hearts to these things. Father, we come before you and we understand it's your heart for us to keep the Sabbath and that the Sabbath is for us to keep because it keeps us focused on you correctly. It takes us away from our thoughts of the world and its cares and the traditions of men and our family members and employers and everybody else to focus on what does my Father in heaven want? What is his desire? What are his thoughts? What are his words? I'm going to focus on that for one whole day. Every 7 days, I'm going to give him one whole day to focus on that, the day he set apart from the beginning of creation. So, Father, help us to be strong in our keeping of the Shabbatot. Because life, I know you're going to allow life to come in and test us. Test us with appointments. Test us with challenges where we might lose jobs, family members, friends. Weddings will be scheduled on Shabbat. Funerals will be scheduled on Shabbat. Court dates will be scheduled on Shabbat. Family get-togethers and family reunions will be on Shabbat. Everything you can imagine that we can imagine will be scheduled on Shabbat that we have to, what are we going to do? What kind of decisions are we going to make? That, I know, is what you're watching. Help us to really understand that that is why we did the teaching called Making Decisions is the reason we exist. That you are watching us make these critical decisions. And that those decisions show you so much about where we are in our walk and the character that we've developed or have not developed. So, Father, we ask for you to give us strength and give us courage. Like Moses said to Yehoshua, he said, be strong and of good courage. Father, we need you to give us that strength and courage to walk this out, knowing that the world and all those around us are going to put us in situations that are going to make this very, very challenging if our heart's not right. Of course, if our heart is right, it's simple. We're just not going to break the Shabbat. If we would just let go of all of the other concerns and only fear you, that's the problem. Our lack of fearing you and fearing others above you. If we would just fear you, the decision is simple. Well, we need you to come to this event. Shabbat, can't do it. Well, we need you to do this. It's Shabbat. Can't do it. We have to, you know, we should even use, I hate to say it, the words of Balaam. When Balaam said, he said, I cannot go beyond the word of Yahweh. That's what we have to be. We have to be at that place where we say, I'm sorry, I can't do it because I cannot go beyond the word of Yahweh. Oh, blah, blah, you're going to wreck the family and you're going to hurt that person's feelings and this person's, you know, 87 years old and they're going to probably have a heart attack because you're not going to come. Listen. I'm sorry. I don't intend to hurt anybody. I can't go beyond the word of Yahweh. We have to get to that place. And Father, we need your strength to do it. So Father, as we come before you now, we are just imploring you. We're pleading with you. We're submitting ourselves to you so that you would, we want to be like the ones described in Isaiah 56 that would just seek your face, guard your right rulings, walk in and protect the Sabbath day so that we would also be given names greater than sons and daughters. So, Father, we thank you, we praise you, and give you all glory and all honor in the name above all names, Yeshua our Messiah. Amen. Amen.